Welcome, everybody, to Shocked Talk, the after podcast party you didn't know you didn't need, where me, I'm Sean.
And Maddie.
We discuss the current episode of Shocked and Applaud, which this time was the great 2005 film, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Did you like this movie, Maddie?
I did. I enjoyed it. I did not get through all of the books. I liked the first book.
Just the first book?
Well, yeah, there was the each book is like its own little series or installment. It doesn't really carry over. It's not really a series. It's not a true series. And so I found that confuzzling in my little lizard brain.
Do you know what I always liked about the series? Was how Douglas Adams described the ability to fly. He said, flight was throwing yourself at the ground and missing.
Well, yeah.
I thought that was pretty good. You know, like the trick is to hurl yourself downward and then miss the ground.
It. Yeah.
Which for me was always kind of like, oh, I could do that. I miss everything else. So, you know. Okay. Back to the show. In Shocked and Applaud, we're going to first tackle the definition of bar none. This was an idiom that Naomi used. The definition is without exception. This idiom can also take the form of barring none and is often used as a superlative. That's hey, I got right. That right. Superlative and a noun in order to emphasize the statement. The idiom first appeared in its written form in 1866 in English author M.E. Braddon's novel, The Lady's Mile. In this Victorian novel, the idiom is found in the line, I know what your Aspasia is, the greatest picture that was ever painted, bar none, as Mr. Le Boyer would say. Ooh.
Ooh.
This usage most likely developed from the preposition bar, which means except, and is most common in British English. Therefore, bar none means except none, or in its current form, without exceptions. That was the best introduction, bar none.
Yes.
Thanks for the support. All right. I decided to take this time to let Madeline have the mic and describe the very first time that Naomi, Jen, her, and I went to go see Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in the movie theater in the Wayback Machine of 2005. So let's go back.
And how many people actually remember the Wayback Machine or what it's from? Just you, because you're old. Okay, so I will admit, I don't actually remember seeing this movie on this occasion. That's probably because we were three sheets to the wind. So
I would say it was probably the tequila at the all-you-could-drink margarita night at the Pottery painting place
so,
we were at.
Yes, so there is a pottery painting establishment in so we live in the Pacific Northwest, and there's a mall called Crossroads Mall, and there's a pottery place there, and I don't remember the name, but it's fantastic, and we've been there multiple times and I love it. And so for this birthday I wanted to go, and so we piled into various cars. There were quite a few of us. I think there was probably 8 or 10 of us, and we're living in the South End, so we drove up to Bellevue, and of course, being that we were in our 20s, we decided to pre-funk it in the car beforehand.
Pre-funk for the millennials means to pre-funk before the party. Make sure you're funking before the funk goes down.
Yes. So we pre-funked it in the car, which was, if your intent is to, you know, paint pottery fully inebriated, it's best to pre-funk it because the margaritas were really watered down.
You know, it doesn't really matter much for me. I'm a lightweight. I'm a cheap date.
Yes, you
two
are.
Margaritas, and I was toast. Yes.
So, but Marguerite, you know, painting pottery only lasts for, you know, a little while. And so by the time it was over, we could not make the 45-minute drive home. So there happens to also be a movie theater at Crossroads, and we decided to go see a movie.
And what was playing at that movie theater?
I'm going to take it on your word that it was this movie because I don't actually remember.
You know, I don't remember the beginning either. I think I remember coming to somewhere around, I don't even remember the point of view gun. I don't remember most of the movie either. Something about a whale and the dolphins leaving.
Well, I mean, we've seen it since that time. So right. I remember the movie. I just don't remember this occasion of watching the movie.
Of course we don't, because we were completely fishnickered.
Yes.
It was a great time.
It was a good time.
Okay.
Good time.
Great. Now, Naomi mentioned that she had first picked up the book at Powell's Bookstore in Portland, Oregon. I picked up this little bit of trivia for you. Powell's Books is a chain of bookstores in Portland and its surrounding metropolitan area. Powell's headquarters, dubbed Powell's City of Books, claims to be the largest independent new and used bookstore in the world. Powell's City of Books is located in the Pearl District on the edge of downtown and occupies a full city block. It contains over 68,000 square feet. Was it like five floors? About 1.6 acres of retail floor space. CNN rates it one of the coolest bookstores in the world.
They give you a color-coded map when you walk in so that you can find the specific sections of books, or so that you can maneuver yourself from one genre to the next, because it is that big.
It is terrifically huge. That's what she said.
Oh, God, we're horrible.
All right. On August 27th of 2020, Powell's Books issued this following statement. Powell's Books commits to a future without Amazon Marketplace. As the community of bookstores in the U.S. prepares for the rescheduled celebration of Independent Books Day on August 29th, Powell's Books has committed to its customers, its community, and its fellow bookstores to operate without relying on Amazon Marketplace as a sales channel. Powell's Books CEO Emily Powell wrote, "For too long, we have watched the detrimental impact of Amazon's business on our communities and the independent bookselling world. We understand that in many communities, Amazon has become the only option. And yet, when it comes to our local community and the community of independent bookstores in the U.S., we must take a stand. This was not an easy decision to make. Amazon third-party marketplace provides a critical source of revenue for many, especially in economically difficult times. While it is challenging to step away at this time, Powell's is confident that this change is ultimately in the company's interest." Wow.
And I think that's great. I think that if you are in the Portland area, or if you want to take a day trip, you go down to Powell's, you park. There's a little parking garage right around the corner. If you spend more than $100 at Powell's, you get free parking, which, let me tell you, if you're a book reader, it's easy to spend more than $100. And you've got Voodoo Donuts, which is just a couple blocks away. You can walk there. So you get your books and then you take a walk to Voodoo Donuts. And
you know what I like about downtown Portland?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I know what you like about downtown
Portland.
It
has more strip clubs per capita than any other city in the nation.
Not that you've actually been to any of them. You just like that it has them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'd like to live in a city that has that sort of like statistic to it. Not that I'd actually ever go to one. I mean, I've been to a strip club, and let me tell you, more power to the strippers out there, but or exotic dancers.
Entertainers.
It's kind of a little bit creepy without, it just feels weird.
Well, that's your personal
interpretation. Oh, that is my personal interpretation. Yes, that is true.
There's no shame. No shame.
No. I feel weird. It's not necessarily, no. Sex workers of the world unite. Okay. We're going to move on to something that they were discussing on Shocked and Applaud, which relates to the character played by Zooey Deschanel, Trillian, and the use of a term called the Manic Pixie Dream Girl. This is a stock character type in films, created by film critic Nathan Rabin, who coined the term after observing Kristen Dunst's character in Elizabethtown, coincidentally also released in 2005. He said that the Manic Pixie Dream Girl exists solely in the fevered imaginations of sensitive writer-directors to teach broodingly soulful young men to embrace life, its infinite mysteries, and adventures. They are said to help their men grow up without pursuing their own happiness, and as such, the characters have no depth.
Blah!
Blah! Other popular Manic Pixie Dream Girls are, as mentioned, Garden State, the movie by Zach Braff. I think, wasn't that Natalie Portman in that movie?
I believe so.
Yeah. I pointed out that Ramona from Scott Pilgrim versus the World is also kind of this idea of a girl that's unobtainable. Well, not unobtainable, but the girl exists to pull the male character out. The girl exists to force the male character into a story and to grow while she doesn't actually do anything.
Yeah, this whole idea of like behind every good man is a good woman, and she's just basically there to support him and not have any goals or achievements of her own. But she must always be supportive and happy and quirky and bleh.
Yeah. Nathan Rabin actually said that he would later disown the term because instead of creating awareness of the lack of independent goals in female characters, the concept was misunderstood as a combination of all quirky and fun female characters with different colored hair and really just like quirky, I guess. That's a good word. Quirky?
Yes.
Quirky.
Which is different from QWERTY.
QWERTY, the keyboard. Okay. I got on to the BBC website. If you go onto the bbc.co.uk and you look up their programs, you can find the 30th anniversary of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy text-based adventure game, which I tried. Madeline was here. I died repeatedly. Apparently, you type in instructions on what to do, like, oh, I want to go south, you go south, do I pick this up, do I pick that up, you type it in, the computer is snarky to you. At one point, I wrote, I asked for it a question, and the computer told me that I had died, and I should not be talking because I am a corpse, and I am dead. You literally are supposed to go through the entire movie or book series in this game, and I could not make it past the bulldozer trying to bulldoze down the house. Helpful hint, if you do happen to go when you start the game, you are hungover, so the pills in your robe pocket help get rid of the hangover enough that you can walk out the front door without slamming into the door so many times that the bulldozer knocks over the house and kills you. Right.
Okay.
The game was very tough. That's right here in my notes. The game was very tough. All right. During Shocked and Applaud, Naomi went on a long-winded diatribe about what prefect means in the Harry Potter universe as relates to head boys and school kids, talking about the name Ford Prefect. However, I have discovered that Ford Prefect is actually a type of British car, which makes sense if Ford was thinking that the dominant species of the planet was the car.
Yeah, he arrives on the planet, almost gets hit by a car, thinks that that's the dominant species, tries talking to it, and takes his name from that.
Right, so unlike the Harry Potter universe, the Ford Prefect is a line of British cars, which were produced by Ford UK between 1938 and 1961. It was an upmarket version of the Ford Popular and the Ford Angelina, which actually is the car in Harry Potter.
Except that, like, this movie, And these books, this whole thing was written before Harry Potter.
Right, but the car in Harry Potter that Mr. Weasley makes fly is a Ford.
Yeah. But the prefect is like...
From the 60s.
Yeah, well, I mean, she... Just saying, like, Rowling did not come up with the term or the word prefect.
Well, not as in relationship to cars, no. The car became a popular basis for the hot rod, especially in Britain, where its lightweight structure and four-cylinder engines appealed to builders. So, there you go. That's my talk on the popularity of the Ford Prefect car in England. Now I'm going to pass the baton over for this next piece. We are going to be graced with a performance of Vogon poetry. Tonight you will hear Ode to a Small Lump of Green Putty I Found in My Armpit One Midsummer Morning by Grunthos the Flatulent, as read by Madeline.
Putty, 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 green putty, green putty, gramita putty, morning, pride summer, groaning utty, discovery, oh, putty, armpit, armpit, putty, not even a particularly nice shade of green. As I lick my armpit, and shall agree that this putty is very well green.
Golf clap, yay! And that was Ode to a Small Lump of Green Putty I Found in My Armpit One Midsummer Morning by Poet Master of the Osgoths of Crea, Grunthros the Flatulent. All right.
That was actually, if I could fart on command, I totally would have farted.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now we're going to move on to one of my favorite subjects, something I take very, very serious when it comes to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. What exactly constitutes a pangalactic gargle blaster? Now, I know it's a fictional drink. The book says it's a whole bunch of weird things that was discussed on the show, like... Old Jank's spirit, some water from the seas of Sagittarius Five, cubes of Arcturian Megagin, measure of Quellactin Hypermint extract. It goes on. I, however, would love to figure out how to do this drink, so I went online and found a couple of places that have their own recipes. One of them is a bar in New York City called The Way Station. It is a Doctor Who-themed bar that actually has TARDIS doors in the bathroom.
Sweet!
I know. Their version of the Pangalactic Gargle Blaster, actually it says it's bartender's choice, but this particular recipe is Old Overholt Rye Whiskey, Atsby Vermouth with a little bit of bitters, a lot of cherry juice, and Fireball Whiskey on top to give it the burn,
yes.
A little bit of cherry on top.
Yum!
Sounds pretty whiskey. Good. Actually, you know what? That sounds great. There is a Hitchhiker's bar in Milwaukee called 42 Lounge.
Because 42 is the answer to the universe, y'all.
Yep. We just don't know the question.
No.
Yeah. Their version of a Pangalactic Gargle Blaster is Jack Daniel's Peach Schnapps, Blue Curacao, and Orange Juice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay. Now, the one I'm familiar with is the AFK Tavern in Everett, Washington.
Pour one out from homies.
Yeah, that is apparently doing pretty poorly in this pandemic. It's, yeah.
Put your mask on, go to the AFK, eat some food, hang out with your friends, play some board games. You can do D&D. They have board games that you can check out and like play there with your friends, and it's really awesome.
Yep, it was. Their version of a Pangalactic Gargle Blaster was a variant of the Long Island Iced Tea, which, if you're not familiar with, is a mixed drink that has tequila, rum, gin, and vodka all mixed together with a little bit of Coke. Actually, it's probably, I should say, like a splash of Coke.
I've never had one, but soda. I do remember getting Jen one for their 21st birthday.
Right. This one is mixed with muddled lemons, a dash of blue curacao, and a dash of grenadine. The blue and the red of the grenadine combine to make a nice purple finish. Let me tell you, about one of those was all I needed to feel a brick hit my face. If you're ever up in Everett, if they ever decide to come back, I think they just had to move. They lost their lease or something. I'm not exactly sure, but it's very sad. It was a cool place to go. That and the Funko Pop Factory.
Yes.
Yeah. Everett is kind of like a really nerdy place to be right now.
Yeah, but we're not there, so it's not that great.
Okay. The Bechdel test.
What's the Bechdel test, Sean?
It is a test to see if a movie has interesting female characters in it. It appeared in 1985 in cartoonist Alison Bechdel's comic strip Dykes to Watch Out For, in a strip titled The Rule. Two women are discussing their movie viewing habits, and one woman explains she only goes to a movie if it satisfies the following requirements, which were then turned into rules. Number one rule, the movie has to have at least two named female characters in it. Number two, who talk to each other at some point. Number three, about something other than a man.
Bum, bum, bum.
Now, you would think this would be pretty easy to hit.
No.
But ironically, a lot of movies out there are written and directed by white men. So to have a female character who talks to another female character, it's actually quite rare.
Yeah.
In the comic strip, it finished with the comic book strip character saying the only movie she saw last was Aliens. And keep in mind, this is 1985, and Aliens came out in 77, 78.
Tell me some movies that have passed this test.
Ooh, some movies that have passed this test are Mad Max Fury Road, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2, Bridesmaids, The Farewell, Sister Act. The Farewell is the one with Awkwafina.
Yes, fantastic movie.
All About Eve, Aliens, of course. The first one. Weird Science, Goodfellas, Guardians of the Galaxy, Jurassic Park. Now, Jurassic Park just barely squeaks in there because the only conversation is between the, the doctor character, Ellie, the scientist, and then the girl, whose name I forget but is named, and they both go run away from the velociraptors, like, at the very end, and it barely squeaks by under that little thing. Here are some movies that fail the test. The female-directed movie, The Hurt Locker, Wayne's World, the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy. Now, at first people are like, well, the Lord of the Rings, you've got female characters in there.
And they're named.
And they're named.
They just don't ever talk to each other.
They just don't ever talk to each other. At no point does Arwen and
Eowyn
or Galadriel ever talk to each other. Never. Avatar, Slumdog Millionaire, The Avengers, Mulan, Aladdin, and The Lion King. Now, Madeline's looking at me over Mulan. Like, really?
Well, no. I mean, she's the main character, and there are other women in there that are named.
But every time she's talking, they talk
to other
about
women. They're talking about getting married and about a man, and
about how they're worried about her dad, about the men in their lives.
Yeah,
it's never,
well, especially in period pieces. That was a woman's life, you know, right or wrong. That's how it was a lot of the times, you know. And so, when you have something that's set in a previous time period, you know, that is what they're going to be talking about a lot.
Well, I mean, Game of Thrones had Arya and Sansa talk about needlepoint for a little bit.
This is true.
So, I mean, Game of Thrones passed.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that, you know, that's all there was, but
okay.
But I would like to, so as a side note, comic book writer Kelly Sue DeConnick proposed a sexy lamp test that if you can replace your female character with a sexy lamp and the story still basically works, maybe you need another draft.
The sexy lamp test. Should we try that?
I love that premise.
All right. What was the last movie we just watched?
We watched The Great Train Robbery.
We did. Could you replace the main female character with a sexy lamp? You absolutely could.
Yeah, I mean,
The only part that would make sense is when they steal the key from the owner of the...
Yeah, where she's trying to seduce him, but really, not trying really hard.
And if it was a sexy lamp?
Yeah, he was just inebriated, so maybe he thought it was a woman.
Mm. We saw The Mummy with Brendan Fraser.
Yes.
Could you replace Evie with a sexy lamp?
I don't think so. The whole point is that she's going to be the new embodiment of an Aksuna Moon.
That's the second movie.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Oh, the first movie.
I would venture to say no, because part of the movie requires her knowledge on where to find the mummy and where to find the book. And she's instrumental in getting him
out of jail. Yeah. And she steals, he steal?
She steals the book.
No, the tools. He steals the tools and gives them to her from the Americans.
But
okay,
steals the Book of the Dead from them. Yeah. So,
but she gets him out of jail.
So yes, she could not be replaced by a sexy lamp.
No.
Way to go, Mummy. Way to show 1999 was just a little bit more progressive in film.
Plus it has
Brendan Fraser.
Uh-huh.
Back when he was like all hot and stuff.
He is still all hot and stuff. There's a whole thing on TikTok about how you do not shame Brendan Fraser for becoming an adult male that was sexually assaulted in Hollywood and then was blackballed. So don't even. Plus, he's still hot.
Kind of like him in Doom Patrol, even though he's played by a gigantic man in a machine suit.
I don't think there is a movie... We're getting off base here, but I don't think there's a movie that he's done that I don't like.
You didn't like Crash.
We didn't actually finish that movie.
No, won Academy Award and we didn't finish it.
Yeah, but that was for other reasons.
Jen mentioned that at the end of the movie, as they're flying through the planet factory, a couple planets fly by besides Earth. One of the planets Jen noticed was... a planet created by Douglas Adams, the writer of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, for an episode of Doctor Who that he wrote. That episode was called The Pirate Planet, and the planet itself was called Zanek. It is a hollow planet that is captained by a group of pirates that materializes around other planets. And then eats the resources of that other planet and then flies around to find another planet to materialize around. And they set their sights on Earth. It does have the brand of Douglas Adams humor. It is Tom Baker, the fourth Doctor.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of like scarf humor, bad hats. Towel Day is celebrated every year on May 25th as tribute to the author Douglas Adams by his fans. On this day, his fans carry a towel with them openly, as described in Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, as a way to demonstrate their appreciation for the books, the author, film, etc., etc., etc.
Etc., etc., etc.
The commemoration was first held May 25th, 2001, several weeks after the death of Douglas Adams. Now, why a towel, do you ask? Well, quite simply, we can only put it best in Douglas Adams' own words, the towel.
A towel, it says, is about the most massively useful thing an interstellar hitchhiker can have. Partly, it has great practical value. You can wrap it around you for warmth as you bound across the cold moons of Jaglan Beta. You can lie on it on the brilliant marble-sanded beaches of Santraginus V, inhaling the heady sea vapors. You can sleep under it beneath the stars which shine so redly on the desert world of Kak-Rafoon. Use it to sail a mini-raft down the slow, heavy River Moth. wet it for use in hand-to-hand combat. Wrap it around your head to ward off noxious fumes or avoid the gaze of the ravenous bug bladder beast of Troll. Such a mind-bogglingly stupid animal, it assumes that if you can't see it, it can't see you. Daft as a brush, but very, very ravenous. You can wave your towel in emergencies as a distress signal, and of course, dry yourself off with it if it still seems to be clean enough.
More importantly, a towel has immense psychological value. For some reason, if a strag is a non-hitchhiker, discovers that a hitchhiker has a towel with him, he will automatically assume that he is also in possession of a toothbrush, face flannel, soap, tin of biscuits, flask, compass, map, ball of string, gnat spray, wet weather gear, spacesuit, etc., etc. Furthermore, the strag will then happily lend the hitchhiker any of these or a dozen other items that the hitchhiker might accidentally have lost. What the strag will think is that any man who can hitch the length and breadth of the galaxy, rough it, slum it, struggle against terrible odds, win through, and still know where his towel is clearly a man to be reckoned with.
Hence a phrase that has passed into hitchhiking slang, as in, hey, you sass that hoopy Ford prefect? There's a frood who really knows where his towel is.
Sass. No. Be aware of. Meet. Have sex with.
Hoopy. Really together guy.
To have sex with.
Frood. Really amazingly together guy.
To have sex with. All right. Thank you very much for coming out to our show. There was more we were going to do, but honestly, I wasn't going to watch the entire movie just to get to the scene where Trillian gets yeeted out of Vogon prison to see whether or not Naomi or Jen was right about exactly what Zaphod Beeblebrox says at that exact moment. Because, you know, I know you guys have watched it twice. Do your own research sometimes. Okay? Thank you all from all of us here at Shock Talk. I'm Sean.
I'm Maddie.
Have a good night, and thank you for all the fish.
So long, and thanks for all the fish.